Hi, I'm Katie, and I'm the Internal Communications Specialist at Oyster HR, a global employment platform that helps companies everywhere hire talent anywhere. I've spent my career at the intersection of online spaces and employee culture. I'm passionate about building digital communities for people who are more than their jobs, and I am convinced that the companies who also understand this are the ones who will lead the future of work. That's why for this mini season of New World of Work, we are diving into global employment stories and how leaders built, grew, and nurtured their distributed workplace communities. We'll be exploring why and how companies are leveraging global employment and hear from the people and companies who are making the strategic decisions and moving the needle. We'll hear from some of the world's best and brightest. We'll cover cutting-edge topics in business, people, and culture that forward-thinking companies need to hear, all through a global lens. Join us as we navigate this new world of work together and learn more about each other along the way. Today, I'm talking with Frederick Thomason, a leader who is incredibly passionate about the power of the internet to better our world. In his role as CEO of Superside, he leads a global team of creatives. Frederick knows firsthand that talent has no borders, and as a result, Superside is able to offer competitive global wages to attract top talent. I had a great conversation with him, where we talked about the power of global teams, the shifting perspectives on remote work, and how working with people from around the globe broadens your perspective as an entrepreneur and individual. So to start, could you introduce yourself, state your name, and share a bit about your career experiences so far?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Frederick Thomason. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Superside. I've been doing this for 8 years. So the majority of my career, I guess, started out my first kind of real job in journalism during university, and then did consulting for a couple of years, and after that was part of building an e-commerce company in Indonesia, of all places, and discovered that there are some amazing people all over the world and wanted to build a company that tries to create more equal opportunities on the internet. And that's why we started Superside.
Oh, I love that. It sounds like your curiosity for people and their stories led you on a path of, I want to build something that creates that opportunity. I would love to hear a bit more about Superside. Tell us about Superside.
For sure. So Superside is creative as a service company based on the internet, essentially. We have a little bit more than 700 people in 67 countries now. So really all over, super diverse team of creatives, designers, marketers and engineers working together, trying to achieve our mission and trying to help our customers succeed with their creative goals. We're doing all kinds of design and advertising, creative videos, strategy, and now obviously a lot of AI services, both helping our customers succeed with adopting AI tools themselves and trying to, as quickly as possible, increase our own efficiency and pass those cost savings over to our own customers.
Tell me what makes Superside really unique in the creative market.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what makes us unique is a couple of things. Number one, I guess, is our commitment to helping in-house teams succeed. We don't submit for awards. We don't do pitch work. We partner up with in-house teams and we help make them the heroes. So it's somewhat of a different approach, I think, from many others in the industry. Secondly, we are a mission-driven company. We've spoken a lot about this before and hopefully we'll talk a lot about that on this podcast too, but trying to create more equal opportunities in the world. And it's a big part of our ethos and who we hire and how we sort of communicate ourselves to the world and to our customers. And then finally, we're pretty much all in on AI enhanced creative services. We are very convinced that it will be a big thing. I think there's not much doubt left in our minds. And we've essentially shifted the whole company to focus on that. I think we are probably at this point the leader in AI-enhanced creative services. Like maybe there are some specialized shops that can do more advanced things, but in terms of sheer volume of work, we've done hundreds of projects. most of our sort of 2,000-3,000 projects every month have AI involvement in some shape or form. We have a huge tech team working sort of night and day, figuring out ways to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our content using AI tools. You know, if you want to kind of keep the same budget, it also allows you to unlock a whole host of new formats. Let's say you have a constant fixed budget on creative. Previously, we're doing mainly static ads. Now you can just, with the same budget, you can have all your ads that can just be motion or video, right? Like it's pretty cool. Wow. It's going to perform better. And so, yeah, anyone that's interested in talking about that, just send me an email at frederick@superside.com and we'll hook you up.
That's so cool. And so I'm just putting myself in the shoes of our listeners, which a lot of them are people leaders. So to help them connect with what this means, it means that working with Superside means that you're able to more efficiently and in a budget-conscious way produce more creative work in a faster way, in a more creative way. Like using AI allows you to offer more in a faster pace. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. I mean, depends on who you're working with. I mean, again, our commitment is to make in-house teams succeed. And our commitment is to pass all of the cost savings from deploying AI tools to our customers. And I think we're probably the only company that is committing to that. If you are a big five agency holding company, you're going to just continue to quote the same number of hours and then just do the work with AI tools and capture more gross margin, right? Like that's happening across the board. We don't think that's fair. And we're committing to passing those cost savings on. Now, very often customers aren't necessarily interested in cost savings. They're like, we're fine with this budget, but we want more. And then it's about unlocking more formats, unlocking more sophisticated things, increasing the creative refresh rate, producing more variations, and doing all those things that AI tools are fantastic at. And so I think we're in a really interesting position where we have, you know, where we can combine human creativity with these tools to get just very quickly a much higher ROI for anyone that's willing to try it.
Yes. As someone who works in a very human-centric role in culture and whatnot, very different than a designer, I've been thinking about this too, of like, it will be a premium to have a real person working on things like this. So I love that you're thinking about this with AI. So I found it really interesting, your origin, you know, sort of in academia and journalism and then moving into building a company. So if you had to distill it down to a brief elevator pitch, what's your personal overarching career mission in your own words?
Yeah, I mean, I think we already started with the mission for the company. And when you do something for 8 years, it kind of becomes a part of yourself. And it's very hard to distinguish what is your own identity and what is the company's identity, for better or for worse. Like, you can't really denounce your employer. And so for me, the personal career mission is also to create more equal opportunities. I think there are many big problems in the world. I obviously think the climate change is super important. I think the reduction in biodiversity is super important. Obviously, you know, increased global geopolitical risk, all of those things, energy insecurity. There are many big and important problems in the world. To me, the biggest problem is still the lack of global opportunity. And my big worry is that the world is de-globalizing, that there are many forces inside America and many forces in many countries in Europe that are resisting global cooperation. And, you know, there are many, you know, points to that discussion, and we don't have to go into it. But I think the internet is really the only hope, right? And we're trying to be part of building the infrastructure for global collaboration at scale. And we believe that's a super important problem, and trying to contribute as much as we can.
I love that. So tell me about how globally distributed Superside is. How many countries do you have team members in?
So right now we have team members in 67 different countries and just north of 700 people or so right now, which is, at least to me, super interesting and exciting.
Yeah, that sounds extremely diverse. I can imagine, you know, as someone who works for a company with similar numbers, there's certainly challenges for that. But what's the best part about being that distributed?
The best part is that it's much more interesting. And especially for me, kind of living in Oslo in Norway, where everyone is, you know, not everyone, but like lots of people are kind of pretty similar, looks pretty similar, thinks pretty similar, works in similar jobs. Ever since we found the oil in the 1970s, the economy hasn't really been that diverse either. And so it's not necessarily the most interesting place for a professional career, especially if you're very ambitious and in, especially if you're in a creative field or something like that. And so just for me personally, it's super exciting to work with people in all these different countries with different perspectives and different values and different ways of looking at the world. And I love learning about new countries, love traveling to new countries, love learning about the politics and the culture and the food in all these places. And to me, it's just such an enrichment in my life. And it's impossible to replicate in the physical world, right? Like maybe some companies or some cities, like, I don't know, New York, London, you could possibly get a similar level of diversity. But for most people in the world, the only way to experience this kind of global melting pot is on the internet. And yeah, for me, it's just incredibly exciting. I'm never going to go back to real work.
I relate to that so much. I'm in America and I'm from Texas. I've lived in Texas my whole life and very different from Oslo, but I share similar feelings of what you just said. People thinking the same, having very similar career paths, you know, values. And it's been so refreshing to spend however many hours of your day, your work day, immersed in global perspectives. And it's just made my world so much bigger. And it's reassuring that the world is so much bigger than just my backyard. So I would love to hear, when you were first scaling Superside, what inspired you to grow the company through a distributed workforce? I think I have my own assumptions based on our conversation so far, but I'd love to hear what really inspired you to scale this way.
I mean, the company was always remote from the start, and the idea was always to be part of building a country on the internet or building the infrastructure for allowing work on the internet to accelerate. And that's been the one constant guiding our decisions since the start, which is to, you know, create more equal opportunities and accelerate the transition to online work. We believe it's a problem that is very big. It's an opportunity that is very big. Providing opportunities for people in some countries can be a 10x thing. Like, you live in Nigeria and you win the green card lottery and you get to the US and you make 10 times as much, right? Like, it's deeply unfair. And it's also a massive misallocation of talent, leading to a, you know, large missed opportunity in terms of global GDP. And it's also a problem that is easily addressed, not easily addressed, but kind of, it's not like climate change where, you know, you have to give up things, or you know, it's just such a tough resource problem. Here's like a win-win, you know, like, we get more people to work on the internet, everyone wins. So it seems like a problem that has a clear solution and we need more people working on it, but it's going in the right direction. The pandemic was very fortunate for this mission. Obviously, lots of problems with the pandemic, and, you know, I guess papers will be written in years to come about how we handle the response, etc. But it was very good for online work. And still, you kind of look now at occupancy rates in offices in America and elsewhere, and it's pretty much plateaued now. Like, there was a dip down to 50, and then now the occupancy rates are back at 75, but they're not going to move back to 90 or 95, which means that there are really 25% of the people, or, you know, I guess some people are working Mondays, Tuesday, and then 3 days a week, etc. But like, over the course of the pandemic, 25% of the working population became pretty much accustomed to online work, which is a huge, huge shift. And I mean, this is going to be a multi-decade transition for the world, but every year there are tens of millions of people coming online. And many of these folks are just incredibly smart, talented people that aren't getting sufficient opportunities in their home markets. And so for us, like, our approach is to try to identify that top 1%, really, like the very, very best. We believe that kind of making internet work successful, it's not really a cost game, like trying to find the cheapest people. Like it's really about finding the best people. And, you know, if you're a Silicon Valley company and you've tapped out kind of the local labor market in Silicon Valley, then, you know, maybe if you're, what you need is really talented people, you need to look elsewhere. Not everyone wants to live in the Bay Area, right? Like drive around on those big American roads. Like not everyone wants to do that. Like maybe some people want to be with their family, and maybe someone wants to be in a different culture for whatever reason. And so I think that's a huge opportunity for companies that are looking to get ahead, looking to get the best talent. And yeah, every year it's just exponentially growing.
There's so much inside of what you just said. So a question I have for you is, you know, how have you seen Supersize initial hiring strategy evolve? And particularly, I think I understand that you've been at Supersize around 8 years. Is that correct? So about half of your time was pre-pandemic, and the other half of your time was, you know, when I say post-pandemic, you know, since 2020, right? So half of your time was pre-pandemic, half of your time was post-pandemic. How have you seen that hiring strategy evolve in that time?
Yeah, good question. I mean, obviously the pandemic legitimized online work to a great extent. Before that, if you were a remote company, and there was some like tech optimists here and there that found it exciting, but by and large, people were relatively skeptical about remote work. And, you know, I wouldn't say people thought that we were a scam, but it wasn't like immediately kind of enterprise ready stamp on it. And now, and I think this is maybe to some extent the success of companies such as yours, right? Like Oyster and Deel and Remote.com, etc., that have done a great job educating the market on the legality and on the feasibility of operating in this way from an operational point of view. And so I think the legitimacy that we got during COVID has made it easier for us to access even better talent. So that's a big effect. And at the same time, and I mean, partly related, but I guess generally independent of this, we also shifted our talent acquisition strategy from a primarily inbound approach to an almost exclusively outbound and referral-based approach. And so we still obviously get some candidates from inbound, but in the early stages, we tried to build a mainly inbound model where we got, you know, tens of thousands of applicants every year. And we were like, okay, we're getting 50,000 applicants and we have a 0.1% acceptance rate, etc. But it turned out like the very best people usually have jobs, and you need to actually go and convince them to switch, or you need to get a referral from someone that already knows them. And so we've switched to a very targeted and I would say highly sophisticated outbound talent acquisition model. And we've switched to a system where we have built quite a lot of incentives for people to refer their colleagues that they know from before. And a lot of companies are trying to do that. We've been, I would say, very successful. I don't remember exactly the number, but I think 25-30% of our new hires come from referrals. And so, and they're also by far kind of the best source. You know, you measure quality, etc., like by far the best source. So that's really the strategy.
I'm sure that was a question burning for a lot of listeners here. You know, with the change in the market, the hiring market, the job market, and especially the last couple of years, there's such an influx of talent, especially talent who wants to either continue working remotely or switch to remote work. Like, as you said, I think 25% is the number you said that of folks who desire to continue to work remotely. So with this influx of talent, the challenge that I've seen for people leaders is how do you identify that top talent with such a big market? So I think the insight here that you're sharing around leaning on your existing employees to really help you find that wonderful talent and bring them in, it's such a valuable strategy and also such a connective strategy. It really puts the shared responsibility on everyone at the company, which is something that we practice at Oyster as well. We really empower all of our employees to bring in the great talent that they know. So it's so interesting to hear that there's a similar process at Superside?
Yeah, I mean, it's super hard. I don't think anyone has figured out how to do recruiting at scale without bias in a structured, scalable way, in a proven way, kind of get the best people. Like, I think it's super, super hard. When I recruit for roles that report to me, I'm kind of increasingly relying on gut feel. And this is sort of like a thing that I guess I'm not supposed to say, or, you know, because we have a very structured approach. But many times I've had a not best gut feel and decided to not act upon it because everything just looks great, right? Like profile, resume, case, everything looks great. I just have some kind of strange gut feeling. And most of the time it's turned out to be right. And so I've gotten some increased conviction in that, and I've gotten a hugely increased conviction in the importance of hiring based on values. And values is different everywhere. It's not exactly the same as culture fit per se. It's not so much necessarily about likability, but really about the values and being kind of explicit about the values that we are testing for and reflecting upon those values in the recruitment process. That's been kind of the two main shifts for me personally over the last, you know, five, six years.
I love that Frederick mentions always wanting to be a part of building a country on the internet. Many of us have grown up alongside the internet, and hearing about global companies like Superside that are committed to this mission is pretty exciting. It's also really interesting to hear about the shift in perceptions of remote and global work after the outbreak of the pandemic. I wanted to hear more about Superside's global hiring strategy, and Frederick also shared his thoughts about the questions he's asked as the CEO of a distributed company. Switching gears a little bit, but still related to hiring, tell me a little bit more about Superside's goal of employing that top talent in regards to Superside's global wage strategy. You know, how do you feel that that attracts that most ambitious and talented creatives that match your values, that specifically the global wage strategy?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we think it's fair to pay the same everywhere in the world. And we try to do that. It's many different roles and many different, you know, functions, hard to find, you know, exact benchmarks and so on. But our strategy is really to try to find where is specific types of talent most undervalued, or to ask differently. Let's say you have a budget of $10,000 per month or $8,000 per month for some role, like let's say $10,000 per month for an engineering role. Where do you go to get the most out of that? Like, that's how we think about it. And, you know, maybe that's Norway right now. Like, Norway engineers aren't that well paid. It's like pretty highly educated population, not that many technology companies that have succeeded. And so maybe we should recruit engineers in Norway, or, you know, let's say Cape Town, which is huge for us in South Africa. Lots of exceptionally talented video people. It's kind of the LA of Africa. You go there and say, okay, we're going to pay $8,000 a month for this creative role. Like, probably Cape Town, we can get the best talent for that. And we don't really then sort of try to negotiate, this person would be willing to do this job for less. Let's, you know, we're just, okay, we think that this is the best strategy for us. And so that's how we think about it. And that's how we think everyone should think about it.
I completely agree. And I think every company, regardless of if they're remote and distributed or not, should take that approach of, we know we have a certain budget for this, rather than this secret song and dance of what is the candidate willing to work for. I love that this guiding principle that you have is, what is the budget for this? And how can we maximize, you know, offering this pay to the top talent that this makes sense from a wage perspective? And it's obvious that that is working in some way, because you are such a distributed company that allows you to really hire from a lot of different countries, because the wage is different in every country. Thank you for sharing that. I'd love to hear any specific instances where, you know, this global workforce at Superside provided specifically a unique advantage or perspective in solving a challenge. How does the fact that you're so distributed, how has that come up in solving challenges in the work? Anything you can think of off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm just going to like, I guess, not to take offense, but like slightly challenge the premise of the question. It feels yes. kind of like you're in the 1960s and you go to some ad agency and it's like, how does it, can you give an example of how it, when it helped to have a woman on the team? And it's like, dude, what are you talking about? Like,
of course
we're going to have women on the team. Like, of course it helps to have like different people. It happens every time, right?
Yeah. Like, it's sort of like the answer is obvious, right?
It is obvious. It helps every time. And I think many of our clients, and fortunately, like the American technology companies are themselves very diverse and open, like at least from our vantage point. It's been great working with them, the marketing and creative teams in particular at those companies, very forward thinking and very open to working with globally diverse teams. I think there are still many companies in the world that prefer a more, let's say, traditional approach. We think that's a big mistake, especially if you're a global brand, especially if you're a brand with an internet presence. Then I think working with a global team makes a lot of sense. So we think it's an advantage every single time, and happy to provide some concrete examples of where it's sort of specifically has added value. Look, many times there are customers that also comes to us like, we're pretty bored of this like blue and white tech style design. Yep. That our American design shop gives us. Why don't you guys try something more interesting and colorful? And I think very often we are able to do that because we share some of the context, but not necessarily exactly the same context. And so in that regard, it's often better. Yeah, I think we are often able to be more original. It's like, you know, one of those AI tools that is just trained on a different, slightly different training data sets.
Yeah, it sounds like there's almost a melting pot of creativity versus this, you know, one-dimensional thematic visual that you see, like I think you were using the example in America, or name any country, right? But because you have such a diverse creative workforce, they're bringing all of those perspectives and they're able to stand out and their creative offering based on what company the client is in, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at the end of the day, we're all just kind of kids on the internet, or at least our company is a relatively young company. We all grew up kind of getting the internet and being super excited about it. Everyone's like lurking around on forums and playing online games and so on. That's kind of the culture that we have. And some industries, like that might not necessarily be as important, but if you are an internet company, then I think working with a team that just entirely grew up on the internet is an advantage.
Yeah, that's such a nugget that you're bringing up of like these internet natives, is I think a phrase that is used for this, of people who are the original adopters of hanging out online. They get that culture in addition to their own local culture. It's such a value add. I'm a little biased though, because I'm an online community manager by background. So I'm one of those people that you're talking about. I have like one last like more tactical question for you before my final question for you. So I think something that can be a literal barrier or just a mental barrier for people, for people leaders as they grow companies, is how can they ensure that they're meeting like the unique hiring rules and regulations and across jurisdictions as they're scaling a global company? Any advice you have around navigating that?
So I'll answer that. There's lots of complexity to it. Like, happy to elaborate on it a lot. And every country is different. Every role is different. You know, it depends on tenure. It depends on lots of different things, how you set it up. But yeah, generally partnering with Oyster or one of the other kind of companies is very smart, I think.
Yeah. And I think what's inside of what you're saying is, you know, people leaders don't have to figure this out on their own. There are tools and resources and companies who can help you navigate through this. So don't let this be the blocker.
Absolutely. And in any event, there is going to be some risk, like irrespective of what you're doing, like you're partnering with Oyster or remote or deal or something, and you get some kind of labor conflict in some country, then, you know, it's still risk.
Well, my final question for you that we ask everyone on the podcast is, what's the best mistake you've ever made and why?
Great question. Yeah, I mean, I can think of so many mistakes that I've made, and I'm getting better and better at admitting those mistakes for myself and slowly getting better at admitting those mistakes for others. I think it's a super important part of company culture to be able to admit mistakes and be truth-seeking. Mistakes that I've made, I mean, in the early days, you particularly make lots of mistakes. I remember, for example, hiring one of my very best friends as an early employee, exceptionally smart, exceptionally capable guy, but it somehow didn't work out. I don't really know exactly why it didn't work out, but that was, you know, big mistake, created, you know, some problems and jeopardized the friendship. Fortunately, we've overcome that and are better friends today. But the mistake was kind of like convincing him to join. He was like, "Ah, yeah, I'm not sure startups are for me. You know, it seems very stressful. Like, I'm not sure if that's the thing for me." It's totally fair and rational thing to say, but I'm just like, okay, but we're going to do it differently. It's going to be like so and so, and really kind of paint or gave false promises, if you will. And I learned a lot from that mistake. I guess firstly to be very, at least very cautious about hiring your friends. They might be extremely smart and capable, but very often it just doesn't work out for strange reasons. And then secondly, and really trying to commit to not giving false promises to people that we hire. Because whenever I just pitch hard and just try to convince someone to join, they just get very quickly demotivated and check out, and that's worse for everyone. And so increasingly, we're just trying to not only tell the truth, but like over communicate how bad everything is, like all of the challenges like you're going to face in this job. It's, I think, a very honest thing to do. And it really very quickly allows us to see who are the true believers in our mission, who are the true people that are willing to do all of the hard schleps that it takes to build a startup versus all of the people that don't necessarily fit in that context, that would be better off doing something else. And again, it's not like a criticism of anyone. It's just about trying to find a better match or trying to ensure that everyone is happier. So I've learned that the hard way, and very thankful that we remain friends, even better friends. I think today, sometimes, you know, you have to go through difficult times to overcome them and in order to really build trust.
What a great outcome. And what you were saying around when you're hiring now and what you listen for and like not pitching hard, it reminds me of some of the best early career advice that someone gave me, a mentor gave me around, you know, whenever I'm considering taking a job, try to find the worst parts about the job, the things that are day-to-day that might be taxing or, you know, frustrating, and make sure you're willing to do the, quote, worst parts of the job rather than you're so stoked on the best parts of the job, because the neutral or annoying or frustrating parts of the job are going to appear more than the mountaintop achievements about the job. And so if you're okay with or don't mind the worst parts of the job, you're typically going to be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great career advice, actually.
Yeah. I'm so glad Frederick could join us on New World of Work, and I really enjoyed our conversation. Here are my main takeaways from the episode. Being distributed keeps things interesting and gives a competitive edge. Frederick and I both agree that working at distributed companies exposes you to different cultures and mindsets. Hearing those diverse perspectives helps distributed companies flourish and allows them to offer value that other companies don't. There is always risk. Whether your organization is in person, remote, or distributed, there's always risk. But being distributed does not make a hiring practice inherently more risky. And there are a lot of tools to help organizations navigate global hiring. Pay for talent. Supersight's global hiring strategy includes competitive wages for quality work, no matter where an employee is based. And that strategy has allowed them to build a team of top creative talent. Thanks for listening to New World of Work, the podcast exploring the new frontier of the modern workforce through an international lens. We hope this episode served to expand your horizons and open your mind to a new perspective. If you're looking to connect with other folks who care about these same topics, consider joining Oyster's free People Builders community. It's a unique and exclusive online community for people and culture professionals, culture and change agents, managers of all kinds, and leaders and executives to find those connections, answers, and tools that they need to navigate this complex world of remote and distributed work. Check out the link in the description to join, and we'll see you in there. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show if you enjoyed this episode. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we'd love if you leave a review. I'm your host, Katie McCauley. See you next time.